Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
But there's just no place in society for people who don't eat ass. I mean, evolution will phase you out.
Oh.
You've seen that video, right?
No, but I guess I'm going to get phased out, but that's fine. They're going to open that black sarcophagus and end the world anyway, so that sounds great.
I've actually described this on the show before, but it's this YouTube video of this girl who is doing her YouTube review of eating ass, and she's like, I ate ass last night for the first time, and she's it like plays pretty straight for most of it, right? And then at the end it just suddenly takes this wild turn, and she's like, you know, there's just no place in this world for people who don't eat ass, and you know, evolution's going to breed those people out. You'll be extinct. It's like something like that.
Well, as you know, eating ass is the only form of ethical consumption under capitalism.
That's right. Yes. Welcome to South Podcast.
Episode 390?
Wasn't last week 390?
We didn't record last week because I was on the road.
Well, no. I meant previously on South Podcast. Oh, June 30th, 389.
So this is 390.
You were right.
Oh, okay. Man, 10 episodes until we hit the magic of 400.
Oh, my God. I don't want to be coming on too strong.
Because, you know, you're such a laid-back guy when it comes to pursuing those hot twinks.
I am, yeah. I just lean back and I'm like, I'm sitting on my dick.
Yeah, so it's here. Yes, my shirt is amazing. You're going to touch the nebula, the nipple yes. Nebula.
The nipula.
God. So yes, episode 390, 2,641 miles. That's how far I drove from here to Anthrocon 2018. And I survived, and it was quite an interesting trip. We're just going to go right into it. Okay. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzz.
She was not feeling great, so she's not joining us this week. So I'm just going to go right into my Anthrocon travelogue here, because right. I had a really good time this year and had a ton of fun visiting Pittsburgh for the first time since I got healthy.
Right.
Because it had been about that long since I was able to do Anthrocon last. You know, so I did this week-long, epic-ass road trip hauling half the For Planet stock to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So this starts on the Tuesday before the con. I managed to actually leave Carrollton at around 9:30 in the morning, and was like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, but here we fucking go. Because I was actually honestly really, really concerned. I didn't know if I'd be able to do it. Because I was trying to make it to Nashville the first night.
Yeah.
And Texas is really flat and boring, and it takes several hours just to get out of the state. Once you get to Texarkana, it's really, really been flat for a long ass time.
Yeah.
And then you get into Arkansas, and it's actually a little bit hilly, a little bit of trees. You know, I actually made it through, like, my first stop was outside Little Rock. I had breakfast, lunch at a Taco Bueno that had two polka stops, so that was great.
Nice.
Got back on the road, dealt with some traffic, and, like, it was really weird because I've driven this route with you before, and, like, my brain was sparking up old memories of, like, I remember that. I remember that stupid sign next to the Applebee's that says, prepare to meet God. The, you know, yeah. Hell is real signs. I'm like, oh, I remember that.
You remember the one on the way back that we passed one year that was something like, Saturday is the true Sabbath, Sunday is the day of the beast, in big, scary
letters. Yeah. And so it was really interesting that I remembered that, because it had literally been 5 years, and driving through Tennessee, getting through Memphis the first time, okay, just making good time. I was outside of rush hour, passed by the accursed Exit 101 truck stop. We stopped there the last time we went to Anthrocon, and it was just this nightmare truck stop. It was old. Yeah, it was ratty.
You and Tyrion were driving my car back that year, I think.
Yeah.
It didn't Memphis reach out and, like, stab the windshield or something?
That, yeah. That was the year we got a big rock in the windshield and it cracked all to hell.
Yeah.
It sucked because it hit, like, my side of the windshield.
Probably. And it sounds like a gunshot when a rock hits and you at speed.
It was on the bridge out of Memphis.
Yeah.
Where the bridge out of Memphis also stabbed my car this time.
Yeah. But
we'll get to that on the Tuesday section. Anyway, so make it to Nashville the first night, got there super late, got checked into the Red Roof Inn I stayed at, and I was joining my friends Zintra and Spazzy and his crew to Caravan North. And it worked out really well because I kind of picked a hotel near the airport at random, and it turned out to be the hotel adjacent to the Waffle House they wanted to do breakfast at the next morning. So I literally hauled my shit into my car, then just drove it across the parking lot to the Waffle House.
Oh, nice.
First time I'd actually eaten at a Waffle House. It was surprisingly decent. Yeah.
Wow.
I got like a fucking chocolate chip pecan waffle, and that was it. And it was great. Then we just kind of headed north. So the problem with caravanning with my friends here is that they're in little VW GTIs. They're the sporty versions of the Rabbit.
And
they're lowered, and they got speed, and they don't have half a ton of books in them.
Right.
So I was the heavy freighter, and they're the zippy little ships flying around going, Jesus Christ, why can't you keep up, fatso? They're like flying down the freeway doing 10 over, and I'm like, my car ain't gonna do that. We drove Panther's sport wagon, and it has lots of torque and was actually really good because we ended up going through West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Kentucky and Tennessee, the states, they're pretty hilly. Kentucky has tons of mountains and caves. It's really pretty.
It is, the
freeway cuts through the, you know, it's like, hey, we're not going to go over this mountain. We're just going to fucking slice down this chunk out of it. And now there's a freeway here. Very pretty. We don't have that stuff in Texas nearly at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe out in West Texas as you're going up the escarpment. It was really pretty, very, very hilly, but also very rural. Like, it was really interesting because once we really got into eastern Kentucky and West Virginia, when I was really thinking a lot about the hosts of the Trillbilly Workers Party, it's a group of socialist podcasters out in eastern Kentucky and western Virginia, and they talk about how, you know, capitalists have basically fucked the region and how, like, they're trying to organize and get people together and help get them out of the, basically trying to help these states get out of being economically crippled backwaters. Because, holy shit, once we actually got to West Virginia, West Virginia is all mountains, at least the area we drove through. And so the roads follow the valleys, which means you are doing some super fucking active driving.
Yeah.
And
full of semis.
Full of semis. Yeah. And for good chunks of the route we were on, they were doing road construction, which meant it was down to one lane. And that lane was often the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have times where there was very little room between, like, the pylons and you in, like, the edge of the road or the void, because it's built into the side of mountains. And a lot of times there's not anything on the side of the mountain there to keep your ass from flying off if you're not, like, keep it a straight line.
Isn't it, like, super intimidating when you're driving around there and you see all the nets up to keep the rocks that fall down from hitting the highway?
Yeah, it's very pretty. It was neat, but also a little scary because there were some storms that came in.
Mm.
And what resulted in, like, because it had been really fucking hot, the rain that was hitting the pavement was causing steam clouds, and the increased clouds from the steam clouds from the rain were causing clouds to form in the valleys between the mountains.
Oh.
So it looked some fucking Silent Hill start of a horror movie kind of thing. Like, lone dude driving his car flies off the thing, doesn't die, but gets dragged off by a group of hillbillies that want him to read him all the books that were in his car, and he has to, like, read a new story to them every night or he'll get eaten.
He has to reenact all the scenes, and then they find the box of Alone in the Woods, and they're like, well, now.
Oh, God.
You're about to get fucked by 14 werewolves. Yeehaw!
Oh, okay. So we finally made it. Like, and the difference between West Virginia freeways and Pennsylvania freeways is astounding. And this was on July 4th. So we were coming in on the 4th. And yeah.
Is it sort of like the difference between from Texas into Louisiana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's significant. And it, because it was coming in on the 4th, they closed down the pit tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
So thankfully it had stopped raining at that point, because that big massive downslope that goes to the Fort Pitt tunnel was dead stopped. And then they like were routing people around the city. But the reason they had a good reason, because the pit tunnel comes out right across the river where they're setting off the fireworks. You would literally have like fireworks and explosions going off at car level. So okay, they kind of so had to close it for a good reason.
Thing. Yeah.
And there was some dipshits that like had stopped their car on the bridge, on the alt route, and the cops were there like getting them off.
Get the fuck out of here.
What like, the doing? Fuck are you doing? These people got to get going through here. What the hell?
And you're leaning out your car screaming, God damn it, I've got porn to deliver. Scree!
I'm that super thankful that Panther has a CarPlay-enabled head unit, because I just had Siri tell me how to go, and I got to the Marriott. It was like 8 or 9 o'clock. It wasn't actually that late.
Yeah.
I made it in good time and got my car valet parked. It was great. And it actually really worked out, because it was really serendipitous. I got my shit, and I brought some meal bars that were just kind of like general meal bars for people to have at the table.
Yeah.
And turns out one flavor was much more favored than the other. That's fine. But I had left them at the counter when I had gone upstairs. And the front desk lady was like, hey, you left your snacks down here. Please come get them. So I came downstairs. And then I realized, oh, I left my Pokemon Go Plus in my car. So I get my key from the valet, go to my car, and I look across the street and Jade's there. My friend Haybuck, she was my head of medical for Nightmare Night. She's just long-term friend. And I'm like, holy shit, because she just happened to look up and I was like, wave. And she's like, oh my gosh, she runs across the street and fucking tackle hugs me, which is really nice. Because I hadn't seen her in a long-ass time, and she didn't know I was coming.
Oh, yeah. It was sort of, not really last minute, but it was.
I hadn't made a lot of noise about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was really cool. Like, I got my stuff all up in the room. I got like a quick shower, so I wasn't disgusting, but that didn't help because it was like 90 degrees and raining, so it was disgusting anyway.
Right.
But we went up to the little, like the third floor bar across the street and had a drink or two and came back, and it was just really nice. We hung out, and then I was like, I'm really tired, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Nice and easy. Wake up next morning, walk around the city a bit, do some touristy bullshit, take some photos. Yeah, because
that's Thursday, and dealer setup isn't until 3 o'clock.
Yeah, so you got all day. I had all the morning. You know, I had a quick breakfast at the Subway. Then I just walked around downtown a bit, walked by the Planned Parenthood and said, fuck you to the protesters. I did that.
Really?
Yeah. There was a group of people like, hey, sup, you old fuckers. Fuck you. And they're like, Jesus loves you. I don't love you. I was actually feeling really feisty because these are the people that they're like a bunch of old white men standing outside of Planned Parenthood, handing out little placards and shit while, you know, the escorts. Mm-hmm. They weren't there that morning because I was there too early. But then on Saturday, Zia and Ajax and I ended up walking back there out and telling them, fuck you again. But didn't do that on Sunday because we didn't walk that way. But if I had, I would have told them, fuck you then, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the escorts were there and we were like, hey, thumbs up. Keep up the good job. High five. You know.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
It's just ridiculous that Planned Parenthood has to have escorts that volunteer to
walk people past
the assholes.
It's but I did my part in making their morning slightly more miserable, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, setting up was actually pretty miserable because they had the dock door open and the AC was off in the hangar.
Yeah, they do that on purpose because with the door open,
they couldn't keep it.
Yeah.
But they also had the doors open to the concourse where the registration was. So there was this suction of cool air that sucked straight out the door. And so there was this very strong delineation of the cold air is passing from here to the dock door, and there is literally like a wall of heat that was trapped, I guess. And so like you went past a certain point in the vendor hall, which we were up against the wall, and it was literally like 10 degrees hotter. So we got in, and then the setup period, it took us about 4 hours to get everything situated.
Yeah.
But we had everything done, just done really well. The poster this year turned out so good. Tyrion and Zia and I and Ajax, we all just kind of like, we puzzled for a little while how we were going to lay them out. We're like, all right, let's try to get some contrast between the two. How do you want to place them? People read left to right, so let's put the newest, most like hyped stuff on the left, and then the less hyped, more regular stuff on the right. It wasn't like a value judgment. It was just like, people are hyped about this. So it was like...
So Claws on the
Claws on the far left with Roar. And then there was like Exploring New Places, Tales from the Guild. Then like right below that, there was like 4-4-4 and then 2-2. We had 16 posters.
Yeah, that sounds
But we
about
couldn't
right.
do 4-4-4-4 because like they had the air doors, but they had this bar across them so that you couldn't fuck with them. It was literally bolted on, so we couldn't like put a poster over the bar. Anyways, the table looked really good. I sent you photos out.
Yeah, it looked really good.
Then we had kind of a little bit of a misstep. We went to Sharp Edge.
Yeah.
And that was where... So the city of Pittsburgh really welcomes the city because for just flat monetary reasons, we bring in a lot of money for the city. Mm-hmm. Except this guy's idea of like, I'm going to be welcoming. He had a fucking Make Furry Great Again hat. And like, it really upset Zia and made, kind of gave us all pause. But Tyrion was like, no, we're going to eat here. And I'm like, okay. And I ended up getting sick from the burger I got. So that sucked. It wasn't like food poisoning, but it just really disagreed with me.
Didn't you or Tyrion have a talk with the guy?
I was just like, hey, maybe not. That's not going to welcome people. Don't.
Yeah.
We didn't go back there that weekend, so I don't know if he took the hat off, but it was kind of like, hey, you know, just the hand across the neck, like, cut that out, nah.
It's nay on the Trump's nay.
Yeah, it's like, people are not going to be agreeable to that.
Yeah.
Then next morning, start of sales, like, I zipped in, I scoped the place out, because we had everything set up, and I scoped out all the vendors, like, where they were, and then about 15 minutes before they were going to let the super sponsors in, I did a quick zip around the room and bought a bunch of furry shirts.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked up two from Hyena Agenda. This one that I'm wearing right here was the Rainbow Space one.
Mm-hmm.
I got one that's like a giant werewolf face on a blue. And these are the full all-over sublimation inks on like the polyester.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like right now I'm wearing zero natural fabric except my underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like in the bathroom at the Whataburger, they didn't have any paper towels. So I was like, I have water in my hands. This isn't going to work at all. So I got that. I went to Art Core's table and got their Coyote shirt they had at, like, FWA. I saw it at FWA, but I didn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, I think it was Sugar Bunny Creations. It's this cute little chibi fox with, like, steamed buns. And so I got four sort of stealth furry shirts
because, mm-hmm.
like, none of them are explicitly, like, yo, check out this sexy werewolf or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
This one has a cute little cartoon wolf, and then on the back has a little like a hyena in a spacesuit. But it's just this all-over design of space, and it's kind of rainbowy. And I was the first person to purchase that shirt because it like was debuting at this con, and I came in like 10 minutes before they opened. So I was like, yo, I'm a vendor. I got to get back to my table for start of this madness, but I want to show some money your way first. And they're like, sure thing, dude. So that was nice and easy to deal with. I helped a table assistant at Art Core get her square thing working right because it wasn't plain but nice. And then we just sold. We sold and sold and sold and sold. And we sold out of Claw that day.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Like we had a certain amount of copies and they all went. And it was really nice because the people that had given us positive buzz, like they came in and put their money where their mouths were and bought copies right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like Junius had been like really positive about this. And we haven't heard, I don't think you've heard anybody be like, actually I read this and it sucks. So
yeah, we haven't had any feedback on it, positive or negative yet, but I totally understand because like pre-orders haven't shipped out yet for the online orders and people just got home from the convention this week.
Yeah, and it was really funny too because a lot of it were like, oh, finally it's in print, and it was like author friends buying copies of the book from because their friend had written it.
Yeah.
I mean there was plenty of like standard, you know, average furry attendees coming and whatnot, but you know, we sold it out the gate. People loved it.
I think your Tyrion told me like 2 hours before closing on Friday it was gone.
Yeah.
It sold out. And Tyrion specifically pulled one copy to give to the editor.
Yeah.
Because it's like the first book that she's edited, and there was a lot of excitement.
We also got her the poster for it, and she was super thrilled. It turned out looking so good, the artist.
Oh, Black Tegan.
Black Tegan did such a great job of that. And she did also the Dissident Signals one.
Yep.
I was on the art book and comic side of the table, so I didn't see the books flying as much as it did, but we did sell through a lot of the books that we brought.
Yeah.
Like Roar, we sold out Roar 9.
We sold out of Roar 9. Dissident Signals sold out.
Okay, cool, because I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah.
We sold through a number of smaller books.
Demon and the Fox sold out as well.
Yeah. I think we sold through what we had of Kismet, maybe.
Okay.
like a number of books.
I don't know. We have not done post-con inventory yet, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But those are just of the new books, what Zia and Tyrion told me.
Yeah, were gone. Like, I was on the more comic-y side of things because we, like, plowed through all of Safe Word again.
Yeah, I heard
that. We plowed through just the vast majority of Sanpico's 2018. We plowed through a vast majority of the Michelle Light 25th anniversary hardcovers and a bunch of the softcovers. We sold through, I think, all of the Cathology 1s we had and most of the Cathology 2s.
Yeah.
We actually sold through, like, everything but I think one or two copies of the Rue Dragon art books that we had, which we never really have a ton of those at the shows, but people were like, oh, this is really cute, and would buy them.
Yeah, there's, he has a particular style, and he has, like, a whole devoted fan base that really snapped those up, which is awesome.
It's a chibi non-adult in the vein of, like, Sanpico's in a lot of ways.
But with less anal sex.
Yeah. And or gaping vaginas. Also, I did have the pleasure of selling a young man who had turned 18 earlier the year his first pornography from Fur Planet.
Yay!
He had come last year, was a red badge, had his eyes on some stuff, but he couldn't buy it. And he didn't, like, have anybody buy it for him, so he was just out of luck. But he saved up his money and came this year to get his copies of Table for Three and, oh, something else. It was just one of those, like, oh, it's so cute. I think it was one of the art books. But he basically, he was like, art book and then Table for Three.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah, baby queer.
Table for Three is a good one to start with, too.
Yeah, so I really like that one. That was cute in an adorable sort of I'm corrupting the youth sort of way. That was a lot of fun. I forgot to mention, the artist reception is also really nice.
Oh, yeah.
This was on Friday.
Yeah.
And we had gone to this restaurant called Lydia's. And this is, Tyrion told you this anecdote where I was like, holy shit, I haven't closed my rings today.
Yes.
And I was like,
Saverin just ditched us.
And hustled my ass back to the hotel.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, I still have to get 20 minutes of exercise. And I was like, all right, well, I threw on some of my kind of gross clothes from earlier set up on Thursday and went down to their workout center and ran on the elliptical that they had there for 25 minutes or so to close my rings.
So I guess this is pretty late in the evening?
Yeah, this is like 9 o'clock. This was actually like 8:30, 9 o'clock, that little time window, because I wasn't going to go to the... I literally had to make an effort to close my rings that day.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't being active enough behind the table. And I got that done, showered, and went to the reception. It was, again, really cool. Met up with a number of folks, artists, writers, stuff I knew. Saw a lot of really cool shit. And the one piece of art that I really, really wanted was this really cool, it was like a limited edition, large-scale print of a Finnick Renamon that Dark Natasha did. It was actually back in 2016 when she put it out there, but I'd just never seen it. And it was, God, it was really pretty because, like, the night desert sands and the star field. And, you know, it's a nude, you know, that nips in a badge, whoop-de-doo. But it's this really, really pretty piece of art. And I really wanted it, but I was behind the table, so I didn't get a chance to bid. Or, like, go defend my bids. But that was nice. There was lots of really cool shit. There was some interesting, like, dioramas in the adult section. There was one that was, like, a furry diorama of The Thing. Yeah, like, it was adult because of gore, not because there was a dick.
Right.
There was a couple of...
But there was a dick.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure there was. There was a tit, maybe.
The creature took the form of a dick. Because they're furries, everybody wanted to touch it and trusted it immediately.
The bookends, you've seen those, Fuzz? Where it's like one was like, they're bookends, right?
Right.
And so they had two of them. One set was like a flaccid dick, like a horse dick. And the other one was like a wolf fucking a glory hole. And the other one was like the dick coming out the other side. So it's like this wolf fucking one into your books and like 3 feet later is the dick.
Fucking portals, man.
Yeah. There was some other very artistically adept stuff that I saw, but I didn't really feel like, I got a bid on anything. And there was a bit of unfortunateness with our show, though.
Yeah.
So my friend Jade, she had drunkenly bid on that piece that I was talking about and was told that she had won. And it turns out that another staffer had slunk in right before close and sniped her. I was going to buy that offer because David was like, I spent $40. I shouldn't have. And I was like, yo, that's what I wanted. I will totally buy that off of you. And then it turns out neither one of us spent $40. So if that's kind of the worst thing that happened at the con, it was a really good con.
Yeah.
But I'm still really disappointed with that staffer. So yeah. If you're like one of those people that's listening somehow, fuck you. I wanted that naked Renamon titty to put on my wall.
Mm.
Saturday was again super busy. Went out to this. I barely went to the convention part of the convention, you know? Yeah. I was in the vendor hall and then I was hanging out with the writer friends. And so, like, we went and had dinner and drinks with Kyle, Thurston Howell, a number of other folks on Saturday at this place called, like, True Pours or whatever. It's like two blocks down from us. Overpriced. The pizza was all right, but it was a non...
Wait, Trulox was that?
No, it was like...
Oh.
I'd have to look it up
on the map.
No, it's...
Titties?
No titties. But it was in Pittsburgh, and okay. I'll have to, like... I'm not gonna dig it up. It's not the big deal. But it was a bar, and we went and drank there, and basically kind of closed them down in a way. Didn't you know they had some decent local stuff, not mixers.
Did you try any like local beer or anything while you were there?
Yeah, I got some local stuff. Not 1227. Not Pizza Parma. Where is it? Like I'm looking at. The map of Pittsburgh here on my phone. But
it was Kix McGillicuddy.
Sure. Anyways, it doesn't matter. It was a place, and they had food and pizza, and the pizza was all right. The drinks were okay. The conversation was really nice, though.
Yeah.
And we ended up going back there on Sunday night, too.
Cool.
Again, Sunday. The other big thing that we did, because there was two Pokemon Go events this weekend
at
the convention. There was Articuno Day and then the Pokemon Go Community Day. On Saturday and Sunday, respectively. So, middle of the day of Saturday, we made sure that we had enough people in at the table with Tyrion, because biggest sales day is on Friday.
Yeah.
But we made sure that, like, that Buck was there and had a couple other people that were there helping him. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't there abandoned, because it was me, Zia, Ajax, Kyle, and then, like, a gaggle of other furries that we ran into on the way. And we formed our own little, like, furry posse to go around, and we hit over a dozen raids in downtown Pittsburgh. So it was like this gaggle of furries all running around in a troop. And then actually partway through, we ran into like the local Discord group that was rolling like 40 deep.
Yeah.
So suddenly at one point, there was like 60 furries on a corner. We broke out into teams and did that. I caught a super good shiny Articuno. It was kind of like my big prize.
Nice.
It's a white, blue, shiny bird I named Elsa because I'm real creative.
Like the frozen character?
Yes, okay. Because its abilities are like ice beam and powder snow or whatever. It's an ice bird. And let's see, it was just basically very pleasant. The community day went well, too. We walked around. Each of us caught some shinies. We all called it like way earlier because the Pokemon Go community was going like from 2 to 5. And the vendor hall closed at 4, so we all had like an hour to catch as much bullshit as we could before we had to zip back to the hotel and help tear down.
Oh, yeah.
Then we tore down and packed up our cars. It was kind of a not anticlimactic end. Oh, shit, one more thing I forgot. I went to a place called... My friend Scope was there.
Mm-hmm.
Scowled at by Scope. We went to a place called Burgatory.
Oh, you showed me pictures of that,
and
yes.
That was fucking delicious.
Yeah, you tweeted it. I think you're like, this place is really committed to their brand.
Yeah, and it was a little kind of cheesy, but their food was really tasty. Scope was meeting up with a friend of his and his wife and their daughter, and he was like, yeah, we're going to Burgatory. I want you to come with. I'm like, all right, cool. So it was a bit of a ways out of downtown, but... He had a car, so whatever. We drove out there, had really good burgers, and like I took part of it home, and it worked out really well because like in the top of the burger they put like a little instead of like a toothpick with a little whatever, it's like a pitchfork, and that worked out really well later when I needed a fork and didn't have one for some other leftovers, and so I ate my leftovers with a pitchfork. It was
this
great.
Little tiny pitchfork.
I didn't want to eat like. Lasagna with my hands. I'm not a monster.
Just you're a furry. Just stick your face into it.
But other than that, it was just a super pleasant time. The parade went really well.
Mm-hmm.
So
how impressive is that? Because I know the last time you went to AC, it was not a big outdoor city.
No, it just
event.
It went through the vendor hall, and you're like, God damn it, you're impeding sales. And
and now it's like. 5,000 local people from Pittsburgh come down to watch the parade.
And, like, the city comes in, they set up lighting for the underpass there. They sit on chairs for the people to sit.
Yeah.
And like they just walk out, they go down the escalator, loop around the turnaround there, and then go back inside the other side. So it's not like they're out walking the streets for long and they're not shutting down Penn Avenue or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have this place for all these locals to come and watch the Frisbee Parade, and it was really cool. So I'm really glad you said to stop and save, Fuzz, because we had a horrific audio bug pop up like 5 minutes to the end of the recording, and it was like truncating my sentences, and it would have rendered the rest of the episode after that point utterly unusable. So we lost about 5 minutes of audio, but we're going to recount that real quick, and then we actually have a con report from JD, and then we'll get to our topics. We do have another email, so...
All right.
Real quick. The first you prayed again went really well. It was really cool. There was a furry by the name of Isbar, E-I-S-B-A-R, who had put together a Furries Are for Socialism, socialist themes found in Anthromedia. They're like, yeah, considering with the Nazi fur fuck off ribbons and people's general, you know, the tone of the fandom, we're like, I felt it would be cool to make these and distribute them at the con. I found one and like posted about it, like, yo, good job. And like it went really far. Mm-hmm. It got a lot of traction on Twitter, and they made a V2 version and then brought more the next day because they got snatched up, and I got some into hands. Like I have a couple copies that I need to like mail out to people, like for like Dogpatch and co, you know, working with the Furluminati, you know, right. Controlling the fandom,
the deep furry state.
Yeah, the deep furry state. Then, like, the only other thing, the Nazi fur fuck off ribbons were everywhere. That was really cool to see. Very good amount of solidarity showing in the fandom. And, like, there was only, like, one sort of negative incident I saw with them. It involved a vendor who got up in the grill and manhandled a staffer over, like, he claimed that a Nazi fur fuck off ribbon had been left on his hotel room door. And that just seems really kind of unlikely. But the person's a well-known asshole. Shitster, so I don't know what he was trying to do, but he basically grabbed said staffer by the lanyard and demanded to speak to their manager, essentially. About the whitest white thing you could do, demand to speak to their one's manager at a furry con, but that was what happened. And for their misbehavior, they ended up blacklisted from the convention, so fuck that guy. Turns out manhandling vendor hall staff is a bad way to keep getting into the vendor hall. So don't do that, kids. I was actually really surprised they didn't kick him out there on the spot, but they're being merciful, I suppose.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, the trip was really good. And so I've got this really quick note from JD, because he is a fellow writer. Where's my phone? There's my phone. And, well, a fellow writer. He is a writer. I'm not a writer. I'm just, like, a voice, and I sell porn. I'm the booth wench. So this one is from JD. Hello again, Southpaws. Because you can always email us your con reports at southpawscast@gmail.com. You can send us our questions anon via our Tumblr, southpawscast.tumblr.com. So, a writer-focused Anthrocon con report, sent today at 4:54 p.m. Hello again, Southpaws. JD writing in with an Anthrocon 2018 con report. This was my second trip to AC, and this time the experience was surreal. The feeling started months before when I had a story accepted in Soulful Press's annual Heat magazine. Among the Furry Writers Guild, Heat has a prestigious reputation, and on top of it all works are illustrated. With this to look forward to, I was more excited for AC than I can remember being for anything in my life. I arrived on Wednesday before the con, managing to arrive at the hotel just after my roommates, fellow writers TJ Mind, said Mind, TJ Mind, and Mog Moogle, who would be my companions for the entire weekend. We settled into the room and were joined by a small horde of writers before heading out for tacos. After dinner, we were joined by Fugue, a writer and editor for Soulwolf, who was also in TJ and Mog's local furry group. We hung out and chatted long into the night. Thursday consisted of more hanging out, collecting more and more writers as they arrived at the con. Mog started the Twitter hashtag FurryConWithoutContext to chronicle the random things our group said and did over the convention. In the mornings, we stopped at the local Starbucks where I ordered the con drink, the Furricino. It was interesting, pretty much strawberry-flavored sugar in a cup. Even though I'm sure that was my daily recommended calories right there, we eventually wandered off in search of lunch and visited a local tea shop. With tea acquired, we headed back to the convention center to brave the registration line. After getting our badges, we gathered yet more riders, including MCA Hogarth, Night Eyes Dayspring, Ocean Tigrox, and others, to head to an informal Furry Writers Guild dinner. The highlight of the dinner had to be watching to Maggie Hogarth as she read Mog's The Best and Greatest Story. That explained, but it's something you have to experience, which resulted in a few Furry Con Without Context tweets. With dinner finished, we headed to the West End for an official con writers meet and greet. It was there that I saw this year's Heat for the first time. I'm told my reaction was priceless.
Aw.
Friday, the con started in earnest, and for the rest of the con, I was either in the riding track panels or the dealer's den. We started by catching the end of the beginning riding, which Otter was on, for our own panel, Doctor Strange Plot, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Join a Riding Group. This was a fun discussion with myself, TJ Mogg, and three other riders about the various furry and non-furry riding groups we participate in. The room was fairly full at the start, but you could tell when the dealer's den opened about half an hour in as people began drifting out, which I found rather amusing. This was followed by TJ Fugue and other writer Sparf giving a panel on intermediate writing. It's funny, I'm like, I know all these names! After that, TJ and I walked with Fugue back to the Self-Wolf table and said hi to Savarinth for a planet table next door. Hi! There was a really fun tweet. It's like, you can find us at the con. It was like very detailed, and then Self-Wolf like quote tweeted, it's like, we're next to these guys.
That's right, yeah.
And then Choco Pony was like, we're across from those guys.
Did I put more thought into my
yes tweet? You did. You were very precise in your directions. There my con got even more surreal. Fugue and I asked if we would be interested in doing signings of Heat 15. I didn't decide just then, as friends were looking to do lunch, so we went to a sandwich stop just far enough away from the convention center that they didn't expect an influx of furries, at least from the looks we were getting. But the food was good and returned with sandwiches for the book dealers. Then we wandered to the den, picked up things like our contributed copies of Heat, and getting a number of books for Planet, including Claw, The Demon and the Fox, and Dissonant Signals. Amusingly, I completed my transaction just as Kyle Gold returned to the table from his panel reading, so I was able to get the three books I'd gotten by him signed right away. Quite literally, I thanked Ajax as he handed me my card back, then turned left to hear Kyle saying, "Hey, JD." This was the first time I'd met Kyle in person, but it wouldn't be my last interaction with him during the con. The rest of Friday was spent hanging out, getting dinner, and watching TJ give the After Dark erotic writing panel. Those would be fun to go to, but I'm always, like, doing dinner and being social. Go to the After Dark panels and just be like, yes, tell me how you write the sex scenes. Saturday was more of the same panels in the den. We attended the All About RAR panel given by Alkani Serville and Kyle. Our little group was invited to give some input, as TJ and Mog are both alumni of the Regional Anthropomorphic Writers Retreat. It is then back down to the den to sign things at Self-Wolf. While the den traffic was light due to the first week parade while we were there, it was still amazing and a little bit odd to sign books for people outside my circle of writing friends. After the signing, I was off to the Dissonant Signals reading panel. Night Eye, as one of the editors, introduced the anthology while TJ, Mog, Fugue, and others read selections from their stories. We then went out for a celebratory drink with Night Eyes and his co-editor, Slipwolf, at the speakeasy where they'd made the story selections the year before. Ocean joined us when he ran back to the West End for the presentation of the Leo Literary Awards, amusingly arriving just as Ocean was announced as one of the winners for Best Short Story. The day ended with an always fun submit and publish panel, this year featuring Fugue, Tyrion, and Kyle, followed by dinner at the pizza joint formerly known as Fernando's. I then retired for the evening while TJ and Mog went off to host the infamous Can You Read It panel. From the laughing the next morning, I can only assume that it went well. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's like a Eye of Argon type.
It's Orc's Odyssey, if you know them.
I'm not familiar with that one, but I'm sure it's in the same genre of tortured prose. Mm-hmm. Sunday was the busiest day of the con. I started a 10 a.m. panel with Fantasy hosted by myself and Kyle Gold. Kyle picked up on the fact that I was both quiet and nervous and made it his mission to get me to talk as much as possible during the panel. It took a little while, and some prompting from TJ and other writers in the audience, but I think I did all right. That was immediately followed by writing historical fiction, with Night Eyes and Tempe. I was a little worn out from the fantasy panel, but I managed to contribute more than just the occasional nod, even though I was content to let Night Eyes and Tempe do most of the talking. By time as the panel was done, TJ and I went back down to the den to wander until my nerves and energy drink-induced jitters wore off a bit. We stayed in the den until it closed, and met Night Eyes for dinner following a party-slash-recording of the podcast Fangs and Fonts and Independent Claws. So that was my Anthrocon. A lot of hanging out with cool writers, a lot of walking, a lot of unreal moments. The con grew again, but it still didn't feel like too many people, like my experiences with big anime cons like Otakon. I was bumped into much more than I remembered from last year, something that is an issue for me personally due to my claustrophobia, but while I had a few moments of bad, overall I had an amazing time. Anthrocon continues to be a surprisingly favorite con of mine. If anyone is nervous about going to it because it's too big, I'd recommend they go if they have a dedicated group of friends to hang with. That made all the difference for me, and that's why I'm looking forward to next year. Signing off for now, JD, your Fox Dragon fan.
Yeah, I think he hit on how to do a con.
Oh, yeah.
They're basically, like, definitely have people that you're going to hang out with. And not like I'd seen someone tweet about, not like a massive list that you're, like, just checking off items on a grocery list. Like, okay, met you, talked to you for 4 minutes, now I have to go.
Like,
you know, but actually, like, a small cluster of people that you're gonna basically spend the weekend hanging around with.
Yeah, it And that was really what made my evening so much better, because mm-hmm. I was hanging out with Kyle and Tyrion and Ajax and Co. because they were off doing dinner, and that would coincide. I also hung out with Zintra and Spazzy and Co. I ran into a good number of pony people, or formerly pony people.
Who have crossed over.
Who have gone into the furry abyss. It was funny, because I mentioned this after FWA. I ran into the two former con-chairs of BronyCon down at FWA, and they were also both at AntherCon.
Oh, right, yeah.
So I was like, hey, dudes, what's good? So that was amusing. But there are people I was on good terms with, so it's not like a... It wasn't a sup fuckers kind of situation. It was, oh, hey, dudes, what's up? But yeah, having a group of people to go with, and that also really helped on the drive up and there, up and back, because I had my dudes with me. Like, they were in separate cars, but we had radios and could communicate that way.
Yeah.
So, like, if we saw something funny on the side of the road, or there was a play that was, like, 545 men. It was just a random... thing, but like it was 545 MEN, and you were like hashtag squad goals.
Or the other picture you took, Big Otter.
Yeah, there's a town in West Virginia called Big Otter.
Yeah,
that I was just like,
how big are we talking?
And that got 500 retweets and like 2,000 likes. Let me pull it up, because it was just this offhand ass tweet.
Mm-hmm.
But it just blew up, because it was this vaguely thirsty furry tweet.
Yeah.
Like, how big are we talking here? Yeah, 456 retweets, 2,145 likes. That's a lot of interactions.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is that people weren't dicks.
Yeah.
There weren't people being dicks. They're just, like, quote tweeting, like, all of furry otters saw it.
Of course.
They're like, they get quote tweeted and be, like, tagged, like, some otter fursonia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's funny.
I got some replies. There's like 1 mile, and as big as it needs to be. And like someone wanted to like take the photo and get a draw over of like a macro otter peering over the tree line, and I'm like,
yeah, that'd actually be funny. Yeah.
So again, AntherCon is really nice. Didn't run into any dicks, like
that you didn't intend to run into.
No, actually, I didn't run into any, like, intentional dicks either. Like, this weekend, I was all business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't have hookups planned and wasn't looking to do that, because I'm, like, I'm the responsible adult that's going to the con to sell porn to people. I have to be in bed at a reasonable hour and wake up at a reasonable hour. I had fun, but I had structured my time.
Yeah, yeah.
That really does add to conventions. Like, I can't just go to a convention and wander around. I have to go for a fucking purpose.
Yeah, like, I do find myself a little bit aimless if I go to a con and I'm not a dealer. Like, it's fun. And, like, the year I went to, like, BLFC, my big thing was, oh, I got to sleep in this super comfortable hotel room till like 2 in the afternoon, and then wander downstairs to the dealer's room and say hi to my friends that had been there since 10, and... Yeah, and that's kind of fun for a break and to see people, but I tend to enjoy the cons more where I do have that structure, because it's like, yeah, you have this thing you're doing while the den is open, and then afterwards, like, plans fall into place really easily, because, especially for me, like, there's all these writers or fellow publishers that, like, I only get to see a couple of times a year, and we're going to talk about writing and maybe go to, like, a late-night panel or something, and, you know, it's good. I haven't been to a con in a while, though, so I'm going to get back into that.
Hey, I mean, life gets in the way.
Yeah.
I think the next thing I'm going to be going to, like, semi-locally, there's the Let's Play Gaming Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And just doing that as sort of a extension of, oh, by the way, I'm doing local marketing for Fiesta and right. making sure our flyers get out there on tables.
Yeah. There's Siesta in like a couple weeks.
I think it's the same weekend. I'll have to double check.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, don't have to do a ton of marketing at Siesta for Fiesta, but, you know, we can set up the flyers. They're easy.
Yeah, yeah.
But for our theme this year. But again, I really came out of the weekend feeling super positive about the fandom and super positive about the members of the fandom.
Mm-hmm.
People were there having a good time, good interactions with kids. Like, there was families with their kids. There was, like, this really young girl. She was, like, maybe 11 or 12. She'd made her own fursuit. Her grandma helped with the bodysuit.
I saw
that. And, like,
that.
There was whole families. Yeah. That was really cool. But also, the other cool thing that's related to furries is...
Right.
Violent J's daughter,
yes.
Ruby Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
She's a furry. Yep. So the Furry and Juggalo Alliance is real.
Yes.
So the gist of this, and I'm sure you guys might have seen it, I'll put the show notes. They made a video, basically a buyer beware video.
Yeah.
Because his daughter...
I read in an interview that had an idea to do this for a while, and then this situation arose, and they're like, we'll make this our first episode.
Yeah. So they got Violent J is in his clown makeup, his daughter is in her fursuit head, because they'd gotten a fursuit maker to do a head and partial for her.
Yeah.
So you got... You know, teenage girl in her fursuit head, mm-hmm. and her dad in clown makeup, and they're like, "These guys are snakes," and they're little like arm things, and
yeah,
and they basically it's a buyer beware, like, "Hey, don't buy a fursuit from Alibaba or AliExpress or whatever knockoff Chinese."
It wasn't particularly that one, but it was one of those. And, like, this is an issue we've actually been aware of in the fandom for a while. Well, they will take. Photographs that a fursuit maker has posted on, like, Furby or FA or something like that, post it to their site, and they will do a cheap-ass knockoff of it that is really shitty-looking and nowhere near the quality, and then instead of selling it like a custom suit for, like, $3,000, they sell it for, like, $800, which is still a good chunk of change, and if you're not super deep into the community that you really know the difference, like, new furries can be taken advantage of.
Yeah, and this was literally a newish furry who got her dad to buy her a fursuit mm-hmm. that turned out to be completely wrong from the description.
Yeah.
And, like, they found out later. But they've done a number of interviews about this, too. It was like, mm-hmm. yo, my daughter's into being a furry, so I'm going to support her in that. And I didn't know much about him and was making fun of him like everybody else, but it turns out they're a lot like Juggalos. So, yeah, like, if I had a fursona, I'd be a fox.
Yeah, and more than that, he actually wrote up, like, in the interview, like, what his character would be wearing and stuff like that. So he's basically designed a whole fursona.
So, you know, Violent J has a fursona. That's cool.
Yeah, he's getting a suit. He's already ordered a suit and is planning to take his kid to a furry con. He hasn't said which one. I don't know where they live.
I think they're in Michigan.
Michigan? Okay. Well, fucking Motor City Fur Con is in Detroit.
So, you know,
yeah.
Watch out, ninjas. They might show up.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, there are furry juggalos.
Yeah.
Like, I actually know a couple.
I sold a book to a dude that had the fucking Hatchet Man tat. Uh-huh. And I was like, yo, dude, did you see the video? And he's like, no, but I heard about it. And I was like, it's cool as hell. You need to look it up. And he's like, yeah, like, I'm a lot older. I got this when I was really young. I don't really fall anymore, but I think it's really cool. And it's like, yeah, hell yeah. I mean, I was around when they were releasing, like, Great Malenko on disc for the first time, and it got pulled. But yeah. My friend Michael was big into them for whatever reason. And so, like, I was aware of them back when they were newish.
See, like, I think it might have been Boozy or somebody else that tweeted Great Merlinko.
Yeah. So that was one of those cool things of the week.
Yeah, yeah, that was one of the one cool thing.
So a few more topics before I wrap up for this weekend. So one of the other cool things, and this was pointed out by Junius64 on Twitter. She is part of Barking Points Memo podcast. It's a good show. You can check it out. This was that the fursuit badges here at Anthrocon, the designer basically said the werewolf was trans. It's a trans mask werewolf. They're binding on the thing. It was just one of those little, oh, that's really interesting.
And someone asked the Anthrocon account, is the werewolf on the fursuit badge transmasculine? And they confirmed,
yeah,
yes, he is. And then Junius quote tweeted it, be like, oh my God, it's canon. They actually did this. The link I just sent you is the picture. So
yeah.
You can include a link to a photo.
Yeah, it's like, hey, so is the werewolf on the Anthrocon fursuit badge transmask, or is there some other reason they'd be binding? Anthrocon help replies, yep, that's actually correct. The artist designed him explicitly to be transmasculine. That's awesome. Thank you. Thumbs up. So that's cool. But then someone's like, it's actually really dangerous to bind with bandages like that. And it's like, well, whatever.
I think they needed something that shows up. It's very high, has to be very high contrast because it's a one color Lucite badge.
Again, that was still really cool though. And the badges they had for the fursuits this year were really neat too.
Mm-hmm.
Like nearly 2,000 of the fursuits.
Yeah.
Like 1,980 or something like that makes them like the 10th. This is the fursuit parade of the 10th largest furry con in the fandom.
like just the fursuit parade at one con. Yeah. And they did Anthrocon did have an increase of about 900 attendees this year, so still growing.
You know? Oh, and speaking of, we have a few more quick hits before we wrap it up because we do have one more quick email. The founder of the Iron Brotherhood is fucking dead. Good riddance. I have put my money where my mouth is, and I actually paid the money to join the Democratic Socialists of America. I am a now card. I will be soon to be a card carrying socialist evil destroyer of America because, you know, I hate God and apple pie and the poor dying for lack of medical care. I like apple pie. It's actually great. it's just the social construct of apple pie as a piece is terrible because it's, you know, 50s Americana, which is exclusionary to anybody who isn't a white American Protestant.
Right. Yeah.
So. Anyways, that's a digression. Also, there is this other fun story titled "He Sucked a 10-Inch Penis, Then Ended Up in the ER."
Yes.
His story. So, this was a tweet from Them Magazine, and it goes to a story where, this is a story by John Paul Brammer on July 11th. Courtesy of Freddie Lennis. Within each generation, a rising class of heroes arrived to champion the queer community. Freddie Alanis, a 19-year-old legend who hails from the Chicago suburbs, is one such hero, or he has become one at least, to thousands of people on social media who have eagerly spread his tale of how a fated interaction with a 10-inch penis landed him in the hospital. So, according to Alanis, his airway was ruptured in January during a Grindr hookup in which he, quote, sucked a Hulk-sized dick, as he put it, and wound up in the ER, radiating big dick energy, which is more than a little ironic, I suppose. He then snapped a selfie from the hospital bed. Alanis didn't post the now legendary photo until July 5th, 7 months in which the world sat deprived of the story of true queer resilience. Alanis, now fully healed and able to give interviews over the phone, talked with them about the experience of going viral on the internet and him being inducted into the Gay Hall of Fame. So I'll save you guys from reading the full story. I'll put this in the show notes. But basically, homeboy hooked up on Grindr, met an old neighbor of his with a fucking horse cock, and he actually managed to rupture his esophagus.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Oh my God. Ah. And the thing is, the dude, he felt something pop and like, that hurt. But he still, he powered through and finished that man off.
Yeah.
And then he went to the ER.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And like, he actually waited a couple of days because, like, at first, like, he woke up. It was you read the article. But basically, like, he woke up. He had this soreness in his chest. He didn't know what it was. He eventually went to the ER. The doctor is like, this is like a one in a million chance that this would actually happen. So do not let this story put you off of sucking 10-inch penises.
Yeah.
It's very rare.
And, like comments are like, do your parents know you're gay? They do. They just don't know I'm a whore. And basically, people are like, their feedback's been gotten homophobic douchebags, messaging me, telling me to gas myself. But every that, everyone's like, holy shit, that's amazing. You're a legend.
I also love the wording, you know, an encounter with a 10-inch penis, as if this 10-inch penis just sort
appeared.
Of higher, you know, like just popped. Yeah, just
it fucking shoved itself down your throat like a facehugger.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of laying an egg, it's just a fucking load of cum. So, one more cool thing, the McMansion, 50 States of McMansion Hell, Texas Part 2 is out. So, McMansion Hell, we're trying to focus on the fun stuff this week because there's been so much awful shit and we're past an hour at this point. We don't have time. We started recording late. We're going to make this one light. So, one more cool thing before we get to our last thing, email, which also is a couple cool things that'll be in the show notes. So, 50 States of McMansion Hell. McMansion Hell is a website that chronicles some of the god-awful house designs that popped up right before the Great Recession we had in 2009.
Yeah.
Back when people were just building weird-ass houses all willy-nilly. And it just basically takes photos of these houses that are on realtor sites and just, like, critiques them with internet-y language.
Yeah.
The author is like a queer woman, so it's not like something awful bullshit, but it just points out all the weird shit. Like, I sent this one to Panther earlier today that was like, congrats to Google Deep Dream for designing its first house. And it's just this bizarre house that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 turrets on it.
Oh my god.
It's this, it looks like something that Google Deep Dream would spit out.
I don't know what that is.
I'll have to show you here in a little bit, Fuzz, because it's really wild.
This looks CGI.
It looks CGI, but it's totally a house photo. And I don't even understand it. And they got photos from like the various, like one per county, major county of Texas. They're trying to like find the most egregious nightmare house. And all these houses are like in the $1 million range too.
Fucking castles don't have this many turrets, man. What the
yeah,
fuck?
It's just the wildest thing. So that's really cool. I'll try to. This is the fun week. We're gonna put this in the show notes because we need some levity in our lives, for fuck's sake. So we're gonna go to the last email. This one's titled "Cyberpunk Plus Furry Plus the Expanse as a Tabletop RPG." You want to read that one, Fuzz?
Yeah. Let me pull up my email here. Let me pull up the correct email. Okay, all right. Hey, all. I enjoyed your last podcast episode about cyberpunk topics. Thought you might enjoy hearing about a game that's up your alley. HCSVNT Dracones, I guess, is a post-human role-playing game where the world is inhabited by artificial anthro-life forms that are the last remnants of human civilization and technology. Think of Shadowrun's run/cyberpunk tabletop mechanics set in a colonized solar system and burgeoning interplanetary war zone of the expanse, but everyone is a furry/scaly/feathery. It's a lot of fun if you can get over the slightly clunky mechanics. There's a new version being developed as I write this, but the original version is still available for a couple of bucks at drivethroughrpg.com. And yes, Shiva, Toric bodies are available for player characters. Hope you like being a mobile heavy weapons platform.
Nice.
And they include the link to where it is on DriveThruRPG.
Another one, RPG called Eclipse Phase, has a new version coming out that also has furry bodies as a choice.
Oh, nice. Also, don't know if you knew it or not, but Mike Pondsmith, the original developer of Cyberpunk, as well as the more fantasy-oriented RPG Castle Falkenstein, is a person of color. I know you guys are into getting more and better representation into the media, so I thought you might want to signal boost it. To be totally honest, if you asked me who had made that game and then spent the next 30 years writing more stuff for it, I would have guessed it was a nerdy white dude, no questions. It's neat to see that interest in cyberpunk stuff has crossover appeal. And then there is a link to the Wikipedia article from Mike Pondsmith and a YouTube link, which we'll include in the show notes. And yes, I didn't remember his name, but I remembered this fact coming up not long ago, and I had seen him tweeted, and I his picture tweeted, and I believe he actually went and spoke at some kind of gaming conference not too long ago.
And also he's directly consulting with Cyberpunk 2077's devs, CD Projekt Red.
Okay, so, it may have been in context with that.
Yeah, so that's really cool. Like, yeah, Cyberpunk was started by a black dude.
Since the 80s, basically.
Yeah, he has gotten multiple awards. He's, like, he wrote, like, majority of RPG lines, including Cyberpunk.
Nice.
It was written after... Oh, he also contributed Forgotten Realms and Oriental Adventures lines of D&D in 2nd edition. How cool. Wow, what all has he worked on? Like, I bet I've played a bunch of his games. He designed board games. Battle for the Sprawl is a cyberpunk one.
The Sprawl is what William Gibson's first trilogy of books is called. I wonder if it's... I mean, it's obviously referencing that. I don't know if it's, like, a directly licensed thing or...
He worked at Microsoft, worked on Xbox games. He worked on Mech Commander 2. He worked on early Ultima. He worked on stuff for Apple II. Mechton...
Teenagers from Outer Space,
Cyberpunk
2013,
Castle Falkenstein, Cyber Generation, and Dream Park. That's cool. So this little section is us going, oh, wow, this guy has, like, done a lot of cool shit. Neat. In 96, Wizards of the Coast licensed Cyberpunk for their collectible card game Netrunner.
Buck Rogers in a 21st century science fiction role-playing game.
Nice.
Hall of Heroes, Forgotten Realms. Character, the Eastern Realms.
For Oriental Adventures, Hall of Heroes, Forgotten Realms, and also did contributions to the original Star Wars RPG from 1987 from West End Games.
The Dragon Ball Z Adventure game, 1999.
Wow. So, basically, this guy is integral to many, many, many of the non-just D&D, and also to some of D&D systems, and it's really cool that he's still around and still contributing, and he's just been this successful creator. That's really neat. Well, thank you for writing in. We appreciate it. We'll include these links in the show notes, because we are full of those.
Yes.
And we're going to probably wrap this up, because we're near 10 o'clock. So, as always, you guys can find the show on Patreon, on Twitter, on Tumblr, on whatever else, on
at gmail.com,
all the social media bullshits.
Except
I was going to say the only social media bullshits is SouthPawsCast on Twitter. Find us SouthPawsCast on Patreon, SouthPawsCast on Tumblr. Find me at Saverin Drake on Twitter, just Saverin on Twitch.
You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf, and my companies are, my print company is For Planet, ebook Twitter is Bad Dog Books. They're both .com, they're both on Twitter, and if you also go to fuzzwolf.com and see links to all my various things there as well. And we're going to be starting shipping out like some of the new stuff that we released at Anthrocon. And also, Kyle put out a short story collection called Tales of the Firebirds, and we are also carrying that. And the ebook version of that is on Bad Dog Books, as well as all of our new ebook publications as well. So if you want to do some reading, feel free to check those out. And, over to you, Saverin.
Exciting times. Like, we kept this one positive because, holy shit, if we covered everything that was in our notes this week, we'd be here forever and it'd be sad. But hang in there, be good to each other, and you know what? Nazi furs, fuck off.